Once again, WTC We Talk Comics is on the air. This one will be known as We Talk Who Watches. And this week, I'm going to get everybody to introduce themselves in their best fake radio announcer voice. So, hey, everybody, I'm Mo, and this is We Talk Comics. I'm joined by...
This is Big Brett Monroe coming at you live from here in House Monroe.
This is Keith bringing you the sounds of the 70s all through the night.
And this is Chris. Sounds for Lovers coming up.
Groovy!
I should have done it as Cactus, I should have done it as Wolfman Jack, baby!
Alright, everybody, so we're going to do a little bit of fun this week. It'll be a slightly shortened version this week, but because we've added some other activities going on in the We Talk family universe that we'll get to a little bit later. But we'll open up with our regular weekly segment, the Weekly News with Cub Reporter K.
More news being shake a stick at this week, and I expect there'll be some editorial comments coming up. I'll start with the small stuff. Iron Man 3 will go into production immediately following the release of Avengers. As soon as Robert Downey's done his publicity for the Avengers, the top of May, right into shooting Iron Man 3. Lots of rumors, lots of fake rumors, and there was rumor for a bit that it was going to be Submariner was going to be a villain. They say no, so we'll see as this comes out. The rumored next films in the Marvel Universe, Thor 2, Captain America 2, Nick Fury, and Doctor Strange. Also this week, the release of Justice League Beyond number 1. This is the first of DC's digital first comics, a 99-cent, 10 or 11-page comic. They'll be packaging these for print 4 at a time. But they will be digital available before anything else, which is the first time they've tried this.
I just want to jump in on an editorial comment on that one, if you don't mind. I did read this week. And let me tell you, if they are eventually publishing it as 4 parts and going to charge me $4 for it, given that this took me maybe 75 seconds to read, I still think 3 minutes to read a $4 book, not so good.
Now, that's 25% longer than it takes me to read Justice League.
Good point. I don't read that either.
Maybe it is a Justice League thing. They just don't like any Justice League comic taking any more than 10 minutes to read.
All right. And we have creator shuffles in the new 52. Greg
Again?
Hurwitz. More. Keep going. Greg Hurwitz, who's been writing the Penguin miniseries, which I've been really liking, is taking over Dark Knight as of issue 10.
Who's and, the creator for him again?
That was Finch, who's writing that one. And it's been fairly poorly received overall. And in a huge shuffle, Matt Kent, who's done some work, I think it's on Sweet Tooth, is taking over Frankenstein. Jeff Lemire, who was writing Frankenstein, will be taking over Justice League Dark. And Peter Milligan, who was writing Justice League Dark, will be taking over Stormwatch. Paul Cornell has not announced what he's doing. It was already announced that he was leaving, has already left Stormwatch, actually. And Milligan was the fill-in, but will now be the permanent writer. And those will likely be in the June issues that all happens.
Seems like a lot of work to shift around people for books that you're just going to end up canceling a few months anyways.
Well, I'm curious why Lemire's moving around. Maybe it's he's had the real success has been in Animal Man, not in Frankenstein. Justice League Dark seems a more natural fit with what he's doing with Animal Man. So I haven't been reading Frankenstein. I didn't care for it, but I love Animal Man. So I'm curious to see him move around.
I'm going to miss Milligan on Dark.
Sure.
I kind of wanted to save up some issues and see... See how he was going to continue with Shade.
Anything else on that before I move on?
Not for me.
All right, well, I got something that's going to have some chat. It was announced this week that the Captain Marvel backup in Justice League will not be a Captain Marvel backup. Because, as of his first appearance in the new 52, Billy Batson turns into Shazam.
Huh?
And go.
They are retiring the name Captain Marvel. Geoff Johns has said there will be a story reason. It's not just happening. There will be some reason within the story, but he will heretofore be known as Shazam.
I would just like to say that Geoff Johns, I used to like you, man, but I don't think I could like you anymore.
I'm having a hemorrhage or something.
Captain Marvel is my all-time favorite character. He's my booster gold, Keith.
oh, you mean Shazam is your favorite character?
I guess
it must already take effect.
The thing is about it is I probably would be more upset if, I mean, you have a name, but what was it, 1941, that Wiz Comics number one came out with Captain Marvel?
Somewhere around there, yeah. I don't remember off the top of my head. Early 40s.
Yeah, 1941, I believe. But so you have this character that's been around for 70-plus years, or you know, at this name. Or on the other hand, even though I hear Geoff Johns say, oh, this is, you know, he'll be known as Shazam from here on, we'll see two, three years from now. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, Hal Jordan was dead too, you know, and not coming back. And, you know what I mean? It's comic books.
One of the things that I look at, though, I think is that a lot of the mainstream populace tends to call the character Shazam anyways and not Captain Marvel. So I think that it's almost more recognizable in that way. So,
you think so?
Maybe that's the reason, but.
You think so?
Go ahead.
I thought he was Shazam for the longest time. Then I turned six and figured it out.
That is the argument, though, is that the cartoon was the Shazam family, right? And Power Shazam, because they could never call it Captain Marvel on the covers. So it was always named something Shazam.
Still, and Shazam is a dumb name for a character.
I don't think that's true. I think it's cool. But it's one of those words. It's one of those words that just sounds cool, and everybody knows what Shazam is. Screw you, Brett. But no, I just.
Hey, I love the character, but I just.
If this is 5-10 years from now, and they're still calling him Shazam instead of Captain Marvel, I'll probably be sitting there, and I'll either have come to terms with it, or I'll be really pissed. But. I don't have any trust that anything's going to last. I don't have any trust that anything's going to last within anything DC does or anything in the comic book world anyways. You know, they just change their mind and change every direction of things based on, I don't know if it's the focus groups that they do or just decisions made on the toilet. But either way, I don't have any trust that this is something that's permanent. So I'm not actually too upset.
2 days without Shazam, or without Captain Marvel.
It is a bit of those, of that kind of Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster thing of, you know, it doesn't matter how many people know that Frankenstein is the guy and Frankenstein's monster is the thing and not vice versa, that people still call the monster Frankenstein. And people who don't read the comics still call him Shazam. And that, that does seem to be their argument. But I knew that this wasn't something that would sit well with Mo, because I know how much he likes the big red cheese.
Well, he is the big red cheese, damn right. There you go.
Well, that's the comic book name right there.
Put that on the covers. I'd buy it.
Or holy moly, I'd buy that. Like I say, I need to see if it's permanent or not. So we'll go from there.
All right. Well, in amongst this, DC had news so big this week that it crashed their own website as people scrambled to get there and see the first artwork. After 2 years of rumors, my hat's off to Rich Johnston at Bleeding Cool. He had it right. Before Watchmen has been announced. 7 titles.
What?
With a backup story running through all.
How many titles? Not one title? Not one miniseries?
7 miniseries. With a 2-page backup story that will run over them all and be one story by the end of it.
Alan Moore and Gibson drawing them all?
Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons have no involvement.
No, what? What?
Everyone take a moment, react.
What?
Talk amongst yourselves. Brett?
What? What?
All right. Well, I'm going to be the I'm probably going to be the lone voice here that says, I don't care if Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons are involved. This is before The Watchmen. I'm totally fine with everything that they want to do, and I look forward to reading it. I hope I like it in a close to as much as The Watchmen. I don't think I will, but, you know, I hope it's good. It's not The Watchmen, and if it was a sequel, I'd probably be pretty choked. But you know what? The prequel, I'm fine with this.
Chris?
Wait a second. Before Brett, I don't get why you're fine with this. I need you to explain that to me a little bit.
Well, really, I just don't have a problem because of the fact that it's a prequel. Like, it's just other people telling stories involving the characters in The Watchmen before they were part of The Watchmen. I don't see an issue with that in this case. Sure, Alan Moore will like it, but Alan Moore doesn't like anything. You know, I would have a problem if it was a sequel, because then you're trying to go from what Alan Moore has really set up before.
Okay, I'm just going to say, that's a bunch of bullshit, Brett. That's all I have to say on that.
I'm actually on Brett's side here
a little bit. Oh.
Yeah, no, I've been bracing for this for a while. And I knew it was going to happen as soon as I saw the DC logos and they had a Watchmen. As soon as that came out, I knew it was going on. So I've had a couple weeks to sort of slowly immerse my genitals into the hot water, so to speak. And, I mean, the Puritan in me wants to go on some sort of violent spree. On the other hand, I'm going to get the Rorschach story. And then again, I look at it and go, you know, if DC could produce a good Before the Watchmen, they would have done a good Question and a good Charlton Universe. So chances are it's going to suck, but I would love another Rorschach story.
First off, let's talk.
I'm going to read it.
Okay, first off, let's talk. You have already... Did you say you dipped your genitals into the hot water?
When you take a bath, you want to go slow. That's all I'm saying.
What the hell am I doing here?
I usually put my toe into the hot water first.
Yeah. I don't go right to teabagging the water. Oh man,
Mo, you want to take a moment? Mo, you want to get into this now? Do you want to go?
How about this? Okay, do you know who the creators of these are?
Yes, I do. I wanted to get the first reactions before I get into that.
Okay, before I react, let me hear that because.
Okay, well, I'll move on to the full list. We have. The backup story will be The Curse of the Crimson Corsair, which is jumping out of Black Freighter. It's part of Black Freighter. That'll be Len Wein with art by John Higgins. Okay. Oh, do you want to react to each one individually?
I just did. Len Wein.
I actually thought he was dead.
He wrote an excellent series just last year. He told the new history of the DC Universe just in time for it to all be destroyed in the revamp. It's a great miniseries. That what was the name of that, Brett? Do you know off the top of your head?
No, I don't.
It was probably called Legacy, one good series.
Legacy, something like that. It was great, actually. It was the first time in 25 years that they showed what Crisis on Infinite Earths was remembered like for regular people, because it was always just referred to as the Crisis, and they didn't really talk about how people, the average person, thought of it. It finished in the spring, and then the revamp happened, and nothing in that book actually occurred anymore. Speaking of Len Wein, Ozymandias, six issues. Len Wein, art by Jay Lee.
All right, well, I mean, Jay Lee is beautiful art, but I don't know if it's well suited to that character.
I knew that one was going to tear him all a bit.
I think art style wise, it doesn't fit for me. I'm looking at some of the other. I call Dave Gibbons. I call him Gibson. I did, but whatever. I'm just looking at some of the other things he's done, and no, I don't want to read this.
All right, I'm going to keep going. Silk Spectre, 4 issues. Darwin Cook writing, Amanda Connor artist.
Love Cook, and he's suited for that kind of stories.
I like Amanda Connor's art on this kind of stuff, too.
I don't think he's suited for that kind of stories.
We've got...
I think he was suited for the spirit. I don't think he's suited for this. And then the spirit and the Silk Spectre.
Yeah, you should read his Parker. It's excellent.
It's not about reading his stuff or thinking he's a good guy or a good writer or not.
No, no. It has that 50s noir feel that I think Silk Spectre would definitely be right up his alley that way.
All right. How's Brett doing?
Just fine. No problems here.
No reactions. You can save it all up. All right. Now the two that I'm a bit hesitant on. Night Owl, 4 issues, by Joe Straczynski, art by Andy and Joe Cooper. Dr. Manhattan, 4 issues, writer Joe Straczynski, artist Adam Hughes.
Why is it you're personally not sure about those?
As much as I love Straczynski's TV, I find his comics so hit and miss.
Actually, I find they suck.
Well, I liked Supreme Power. I liked Rising Stars.
Yeah, Rising Stars, I love.
A lot of his more mainstream stuff, though, you know, Spider-Man and Superman stuff, I really don't.
Blue.
Mm-hmm. Some rough stuff in there.
See, here's the thing. I suppose they've tried to get some good creators on this. Because if you didn't, people would revolt, right? They're going to anyways. Brett says he has no problem because they're prequels, and it's true. You don't have to read these if you don't want to, and you can still enjoy the regular series. And the same could be said of a sequel. The fact that... I have so many issues with this, I don't even know where to start. Let's start with this one. It's just unnecessary.
What about Rorschach? Who wrote
it? I'm willing to get it. Let it go. There's 3 miniseries to go. We've had a lot to take in.
It's unnecessary. You talk about not having any problem with it, and you'll read it, and you're looking forward to it. Is it needed? You have something that's already basically perfect, and you're sitting there going, it's just prequels. Well, these just prequels are going to lead into this series. And it's done without the creators. This is my issue. At what point in time, even though Alan Moore doesn't own the characters, do you have respect for the creator's vision?
Well, and here's a dicey part of this whole thing. When Moore and Gibbons did Watchmen, the deal was that they would own the rights to everything after the series had been out of print for a year. At the time, trade paperbacks weren't a common thing. They expected that meant 12 months after issue 12 was released. And that was what they went in. What was on paper is one thing, and what they thought was another. They believed that 24 months after the first issue came out, 12 months after the last issue, they would have the rights to these characters. DC created one of the first real trade paperbacks, and this book has never been out of print. They have never gotten the rights to it. This is exactly why Alan Moore won't work with DC anymore, is he feels they screwed him on Watchmen.
They did.
So that is one of the dicey parts. And what has happened in the meantime is that DC has gone to Moore over and over saying, we want more of these. They've even gone so far as to offer to give him the rights to Watchmen if he created more Watchmen stories for them. And he's refused that. So it's a complex issue, but I mean, Moe does have a point that, you know, these would have been creator-owned characters if the trade paperback wasn't put out.
I think it's different when you go in and you create a character you create a character for a Marvel or whatever, but even then, why did Image become come into existence? Well, part of it was that the creators were creating these characters that were licensed off to the company, and they never had them again, and it was upsetting. It still is. It is this basic concept of spitting in the creator's face, and it's unnecessary because you have something that's perfect and has and will continue to make you money as is without having to do any extra miniseries. Because the trade paperback has been in print and other forms, DC's made a shitload off of this already. I just have problems with it. It just doesn't feel like it's needed, and it feels like doing something for the sake of a money grab instead of doing something because you think it's cool. And you say it's just a prequel, but let's face it, it's going to lead in continuity-wise into this series. So you can't say it's not tied in. You can't say there isn't something that can be screwed up. Even if there's one thing that Alan Moore read, and even if he wasn't angry about everything, even if there's one thing that he read and said, this isn't my vision for what I would have done leading into this character, then it's wrong for me. And like I say, I mean, at what point in time does the creator's vision, who gave you so much, become respected, even if he doesn't own the character?
Anyone else want to jump in on that?
We wouldn't have a lot of... We wouldn't have the DC Universe or the Marvel Universe if we just started giving the rights back to the creator.
Okay, I think that's a little bit different. I think DC will admit, to some ways, Joel Schuster and Siegel got screwed. They got screwed, Chris, and it wasn't right, and it's still not right. And now that they have a little bit, they still don't make any money. The family doesn't make any money off of it, and that's not right. And the fact that they actually ended up giving, saying that a character is created by somebody as a little bit of a tribute is not enough. Marvel's a little bit different in that the man that created the majority of those characters worked for the company for 5,000 years, and knew he was creating and licensing those characters off to them. When Siegel and Schuster and Kane and these people were creating these characters, I don't think they really had an idea that these characters would go to this company and they'd never get them back. Because it was a different era and it was a different idea of what published characters would be or wouldn't be, and it was a brand new medium and they weren't business savvy and this type of thing. So there's nothing wrong with creating characters and not giving them back to a creator. That's not the point. The point is the same thing, Chris, and you would have said this yourself. Elektra is dead. Frank Miller created Elektra. They should never have brought her back, and you said you were pissed about that when they brought her back in the 90s. So you can't tell me there's something different in this than that.
I'm not saying I'm happy with The Watchmen. I'm just sort of looking forward to a new Rorschach story. I'm not arguing that what they're doing is right. Just to address your point on the Marvel situation, what Stan Lee created and what he didn't is really up for debate. Marvel has its fair share of skeletons in the closet.
Don't filibuster here, Chris, because I know that as well, but that's not really your...
I'm just really tired of Alan Moore's rants and him not being happy with anything. I mean, he's been screwed over more times than I can count, but at the same time, he's not willing to work with anybody on anything.
If he doesn't want to, he has the right not to. He doesn't have to. He's tried to work with a lot of people and it hasn't worked out for him or whatever, but the guy doesn't have to. If he's not happy, he's not happy. If he doesn't want to work, he doesn't have to work. Fine. That doesn't mean somebody has to piss on what he did before. Keith is loving this because he knew this would create debate. He's like, we don't need any topics this week. We got reviews and my news, and he's right.
All right. 3 more to go.
Oh, okay.
Please finish them off.
6 issues, The Comedian, Brian Azzarello, art by J.G. Jones. Minutemen, 6 issues, writer-artist Darwin Cook. And Rorschach, 4 issues, written by Brian Azzarello and the artist Lee Bermeo.
Yeah, I read Wonder Woman, so I presume this will suck.
This is the one that, when I was looking through it, I saw the cover of that Rorschach, and I'm like, I can be as high and mighty as I want to pretend it, but I might as well prepay for that Rorschach book right now.
I'm sorry, who did you say the artist was?
Lieber Mayo, who did Batman Noel.
Oh, okay.
So, 7 miniseries, which will be published over the course of the summer. It'll be quite a wave. There's no word yet on the publishing schedule, but expect to see probably one a week and then staggered as they come out. Now, what Mo was saying about the way it colors the way you view the other works, there is the argument, you know, Jaws 4 exists, it's horrible, it doesn't mean that Jaws 1 sucks now because Jaws 4 exists. But the flip side is that, and what I think most fans are burned by, is the unpopularity of the Star Wars prequels. And I watch the Star Wars prequels, I actually like them, but after seeing the Star Wars prequels, the way I watch the Star Wars 4 through 6 is different. I watch 4 through 6, and it's the story of Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's not Luke Skywalker's story to me anymore. And there is a bit of that. As Mo was saying, it does change. Having bits that weren't in it before changes the way that you see that original work.
Yeah.
Of course, the big difference with Star Wars is that it is by the original creator.
Yeah, making
I'd also make the argument that comic books is a serialized medium. And we should have built up some dissidence to this phenomenon by now. Just because I've read a bad Batman story does not mean it deters my love of The Killing Joke.
Oh, that's valid.
Look, okay.
I think they're different mediums.
Different mediums or different...
But isn't part of that, though, that it's the watered-down thing? I mean, this is a bit like, you know, I thought about starting to call it Watchmen Expanded Universe. The way that licensed material you do think of...
Keith, before you go on, just want to answer that. Just because you've read a bad Batman story doesn't mean that you read The Killing Joke, but there's a difference. You read a lot of Batman that was good or bad first, then The Killing Joke came, and then there's been a lot of Batman that's good or bad since. If The Killing Joke was the first Batman story ever published, or The Dark Knight was the first Batman story ever published and it ended, I would have said there never should have been another Batman story, because it's perfect.
I think maybe my argument against what Chris said is, I take something like Death in the Family, which I loved when it came out, really enjoyed that story, that they went back and retconned parts of that so that Jason Todd could be alive, does affect the way that I read that story, and it does diminish it.
Yeah. How about or Batman Year One, and then you do Batman Year Two? You know.
Yeah, there is going back to the well, yeah.
I don't know. I just, don't get me wrong, I think the idea of what creates a character and gives it life is having other people do different takes with it through the years. And, for instance, Daredevil being a fine example in that there was never an excellent Daredevil story that people cite until the character had been around for about 18 years or whatever and Miller came on, or wherever it was, 20 odd years. So, I mean, there is something to be said for the idea that you can take these characters after they've already been around and being average and what can really, and since then he's had a bunch of excellent stories. So the idea of these characters and new people, I mean, fresh takes and new takes and evolving the character, that's fine. But there's a difference between doing it with characters where they're part of a universe and there's something there that allows you to evolve them, that allows growth, and something there that's taking something that's perfect and not caring about what it is and just doing your own thing around it anyways. Does that make any sense? Am I explaining myself properly?
I think the thing is, though, is that I don't think these creators don't care. I think these creators care a lot.
The company doesn't care is the point, Brett.
No, I don't, you know, and yes, I have no doubt whatsoever that this is pretty much a cash grab by DC. I don't, you know, it's this year's cash grab by DC. 52 was last year's. Okay, but, you know, the thing is that they have tried to hand it to, they're going to hand it to people who care a great deal about the original subject matter. And they're going to do their best, I would like to think, to make stories that Alan Moore would approve of. So I hope I get those.
Well, you know what?
And that's why I'm interested.
If I was Brian Azzarello and they came to me and said, we're going to pay you a shitload of money to do this, I'd say, bite me. I'm not touching Alan Moore's work because I have too much respect for what he did.
Okay. And that's you. And Brian Azzarello said yes. And maybe Brian
Azzarello said... Say it!
But, you know, maybe they said, hey, this is awesome. I have a chance to take one of the, you know, one of the characters from one of the greatest books of all time and, you know, put my own take on it and hopefully try to live up to that which has come before. You know, I take it as a challenge and I'm going to go for it.
And what happens, Brett, if these come out and seven stories come out, eight stories in total, seven miniseries, is that right?
Correct.
What happens if these eight stories come out and you get four that are average, two that are really good, and two that are shit? What does that mean then?
Well, I think that means that what everybody anticipated has come true.
I got a couple of quotes I want to read you, and it's two very, very different opinions from two people who, you know, to me are the two that most should have their voice heard on this issue. Alan Moore talking to the New York Times, his quote, I don't want money. I want this not to happen. Now, Dave Gibbons, may these new additions have the success they desire. So that's two very, very different opinions from the two creators of this book. And then John Higgins, who was the colorist.
Yeah.
John Higgins, who was the colorist on Watchmen, is drawing the backup story. So he's the only original creator that's involved.
Gibbons has continued to work with DC. He works with them now, doesn't he?
Yeah, and when they were making the Watchmen film, Gibbons was a consultant on it. Moore, of course, tried to stop. Well, he couldn't stop the film, but he certainly spoke out against it.
Why do I get the feeling that Gibbons is proud of the work, but it's not as personal to him?
Well, I think the thing is that Gibbons is one of those people who actually can kind of forgive and forget, whereas Alan Moore is a guy who I think if you accidentally, you know, kicked him in the shin one day, he would hold a grudge until the day he died.
No, I think you're wrong. I think if you kicked him in the shin and walked on, he'd hold a grudge for the day he died. I think if you kicked him in the shin and said, I'm very, very sorry about that, it's my mistake, he'd move on.
I think he would attack you with magic.
That also seems fair.
That is, yes.
Kicking him in the shin, that would involve walking on the same side of the street. That man is scary.
You know what?
That is also true.
I have had dreams that I'm like, I've never been able to figure it out, this nightmare, where Rasputin's chasing me, if it's actually him or Alan Moore.
Now, there are two last quotes I want to read, and it's, I promised on Twitter that I would bring up the word mongoose, and it's what's been rattling around in my head, and I'll explain my little story. So I've got two quotes. One is, the whole point of having great characters is the opportunity to explore them more deeply with time, reinterpreting them for each new age. The DC allowed these characters to sit on a shelf for over two decades to show respect is salutary. The second quote I want to read is, I have no desire to become involved with these novels. I will not endorse them. It ain't the money. It ain't the deal. I'm for rent. I'm not for sale. I have an obligation to the viewers of my show to be consistent and to always work to the for the utmost quality in our storytelling within the framework of a consistent universe. If you want a pocket universe, feel free, but it's got nothing to do with blank universe insofar as I'm concerned.
Who could that be?
The reason I bring up the word mongoose is that the first quote is Joe Straczynski explaining how it's great that he's working on Watchmen, before Watchmen. The second quote is Joe Straczynski talking about Mongoose Publishing doing books based on Babylon 5 that he would not be involved in.
Yeah. Yeah. What a douche. I'm gonna give you this. Nobody ever wrote a sequel to Moby Dick. And nobody ever tried, and nobody ever should.
But there was a writer who wrote stories about Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella having sex together. His name was Alan Moore. And he had great success with it. So apparently those characters were fine to screw around with.
It's not the same. And you know it.
Quotes don't, it's aren't not the mutually same. Exclusive. He just wasn't endorsing the books that he wasn't involved with. He was just saying in his mind they didn't exist.
And Alan Moore, in his mind, can say that these don't exist. So
exactly. Really, if I read this new Watchmen series and I don't like it,
that is not the way I read that quote. That is not the way I read that quote from Joe Straczynski myself. Not at all. I am for rent, not for sale. And you think that's just me and you're not? I don't see that. I don't see that.
Now, I do want to say, because Straczynski is prone to threatening to sue people, he has been... His wording.
And I'm sorry I called him a douche.
His wording is parsed incredibly carefully so that this conclusion, that the parallel I'm drawing, he's trying not to have drawn. Because he's been clear that, you know, with Mongoose, he wasn't involved. They had spread rumor that he was involved and then he wasn't. And then when he read the stuff, he didn't like it, so he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And basically he went out publicly and said that it's fan fiction that has nothing to do with me. In Alan Moore's case, he was offered an opportunity to work on this stuff and he refused over and over. So it is a slightly different case, but I don't think it's a completely different case.
No, and I don't think
all right, and so that's I love Joe Straczynski and that's Keith at WeTalkBox.com.
Oh, God, I just stopped following Joe Straczynski. As much as I love him, he's crazy.
Okay, and you know what?
You can't go with Harlan Ellison. You have to be a little bit crazy. You have to threaten to sue somebody once a week just to hang out with Harlan.
I got copied on a tweet where he threatened to sue somebody. I'm serious. It wasn't me he was threatening, but it was someone who said, you know, basically made a knock-on comment about how there seemed to be a whole lot of comics that Joe Straczynski started writing and didn't finish. And he said that was disparaging his character and you should look up libel laws.
You know, I got no problem with Star Trek fan fiction films. You know, I have no problem with that. I guess it's almost difficult to explain how you would feel on something like this. But you feel the way you feel and certainly there's no in between. There's either you're really for this or you're really against this.
Well, no, I don't agree with that. I mean, I'm not really for it, but I'm not really against it. I'm fine with reading it.
Yeah, but you're not really a human being.
Never happened?
No, I was sort of on the fence. I've been forced to be a little defensive because you're so against this idea. But
I can't actually tell how Keith thinks about it.
A good
he's
just idea. Loving, I don't
Keith's
know.
Keith's just
a
loving
good idea.
Stirring up the shit this episode. I can't tell how he feels.
Oh man! Right before we started recording, I tweeted Bleeding Cool and like, look up Mongoose Publishing. I felt like Deep Throat.
you know how hard it is for me not to make a mom joke there.
You know, I'm a bit conflicted. I mean, it kept being referred to as Watchmen 2, and I'm with Brett that a sequel I would have absolutely hated the idea because it is purposely a bit open-ended. I don't want to spoil our 25-year-old comic, but the ending is a bit ambiguous, and it is a little open-ended that it could go a lot of different directions, and I like that you can write your own. The one in your head is going to be better than anything they're going to write anyway. That said, there's some good creators there. I'm, certainly, become a fan of Bermeo really fast. I showed my wife, who's not a comic reader, I showed her that cover to the Rorschach, and there's a chance I might finally get her to read a comic book. She loved Rorschach in the film, so... I know that I'm going to end up reading at least the first issue of everything. Where it goes after that, I wonder if the four of us are going to do a review show of the first issues of these, or if the foot is already down.
I think we will, because I think it's irresponsible as podcast hosts not to some degree. But, yeah. All right, let's final thoughts. Here's my final thoughts on this. And then we'll move on to our reviews, no other subjects this week, because we've already gone out on something good here. But we'll go on to our weekly review section, as we call our reviews. But I'm just going to say...
Are you skipping the Green Arrow again?
Besides the entire statement. All right, Brett, last thoughts on this topic?
Well, essentially, I'm going to read it. I'm going to hope it's good. I'm sure we're going to review it, and that's really going to be the way it works. I'm still going to have Alan Moore's Watchmen on my shelf, and I'm basically in my head, I'm preparing to distance myself with these prequels. So, you know, hopefully there'll be no need to really be like, oh my lord, these are so horrible. I'll never read Watchmen the same again.
Brett, you often talk about how much you love Kraven's Last Hunt. Do you have Soul of the Hunter?
Yes.
Does it sit next to Kraven's Last Hunt at the shop?
Yeah, I think it does, actually.
So? All right. Chris, last thoughts?
My fingers are crossed. I'm looking forward to Rorschach and the Zilk Spectre. Other than that, yeah, I've had a little bit of time to get used to this idea.
I think expanded universe is the way I'm going to think of this. I actually have read the Mongoose books of Babylon 5 because they released them for free when their license was running out. One of them is enjoyable, and two of them are terrible. And I wrote a blog quite a long time ago when I put all of the Babylon 5 stuff in order, and I felt that I should include one of those books because it was written by Claudia Christian, who played a character on Babylon 5. But unfortunately, when JMS killed that book, it was unpublishable. So it's not canon to me. It will be expanded universe, and an alternate take is probably how I'll approach it.
All right, I have one last thing I just want to add.
And that's the news.
All right, Brett, why don't you open up with the review?
So I'm going to start out with Venom number 13. Now, Keith has been a humongousaurus fan of Venom for a little while, ever since the Spider-Allen crossover.
Hold on. A humongousaurus?
Well, you know, Jurassic Strike Force 5, right? I figured that the...
You try to keep it... Brett's using his Turner Classic Movies thesaurus for when they have to edit out swear words.
Just making sure...
That his TBS thesaurus.
Just making sure I heard him right. Okay, Brett, what were you saying?
So anyways, humongousaurus, Keith, and... ooh, there you go. And so anyways, Keith has been wanting us all to read Venom. So... finally, Venom 13, we decided to take up the comic book and give it a read. Now, this one, I'm not 100% sure why anybody would ask me to read this book, as it involves the new Ghost Rider, the Red Hulk, and X-23. Venom is actually hardly even in this book, and the story is just, wow. For me, the story is really convoluted and really more of a Ghost Rider story than it is actually a Venom story. I think Venom appears in, like, we'll say 5 or 6 pages. So at the end of this, it's just a collection of a whole bunch of characters that I just don't care about. But Venom might be interesting, so... I don't think I would... This is not a great start for me on Venom, I'll tell you that much.
I started reading this issue, and I saw the Red Hulk was in it, and my first thought was, I regret making this one of the books for this week. I hate the Red Hulk so much. I picked Avenging Spider-Man up on the shelf, and I thought, oh, the new Avenging Spider-Man, I hear this is really good. Red Hulk's on the cover. I'm just going to put that down right now.
Why do you hate the character so much?
I think it's because every time I read anything about the Red Hulk, at first my brain doesn't connect, and then I go, oh yeah, this is Thunderbolt Ross. This is terrible.
And really, the way the character's written, yeah, that's terrible.
Not only is it so unnecessary to have like six different Hulks, but that it's Thunderbolt Ross is so silly.
You know what? It's like Superman was better when there was one Superman, when he was unique, right? Maybe you had one other member of the Superman family, Supergirl. But when they expanded to having a lot of other Superman characters, that was when they decided they needed to clean up the continuity. And it's the same thing. The Hulk's not unique when there's, you know, anyways. Anyways, go on with your review of Venom.
Well, it's start of the big event, the mini event, that puts a big question mark on what the point one books are supposed to be about. The theory of point one, or the concept, is supposed to be that it's jump on points. This crossover continues in 13.1, 13.2, 13.3, 13.4, and then in 14. Not all of which will be written by Remender. I believe 3 of the 6 parts are written by Remender. It's a lot of characters to get to kind of a silly concept. The reason for these specific characters is to tie back into the new Fantastic Four, which is about 21 years old now, when Hulk, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man were the new Fantastic Four. And so, I mean, you look, there's a easy analog to each of those four characters in this book. That's the only reason for these four characters to be in the same book, though. They don't fit together. Ghost Rider doesn't fit with anyone. Like, there's just no reason for these four people to be on an adventure. And after one issue, I still don't know why they're all ending up at the same place. They seem to be on separate adventures and just happen to be in the same place at the same time.
And it's not New York City, Chris, where you would expect them to be in the same place at the same time.
Chris is trying to get my attention
here. Yeah. No, I just want my review sort of ties in. This reminded me of The Champions, where you have a bunch of characters that have nothing in common grouped together. And if you notice, Ghost Rider's motorcycle in this is exactly the same design as the one he rode when he was with the Champion. this team does not work. And I've liked Venom up till now. It made a weird turn here.
It is, and I have a bad feeling that at the end of this 6-part story, it's going to loop back to where it was when the story started.
Which is where?
Flash Thompson has gone AWOL, and he's broken up with Betty because he's become addicted. He started drinking, and he's become addicted to wearing a symbiote.
Betty what? Betty Brant or Betty Ross?
Betty Brant. Betty Brant. He's been dating Betty Brant for a significant amount of time in the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he's become addicted to the symbiote because when he wears the symbiote, he has his legs back.
Okay. Is this the same creative team that has been doing both artist and writer that has been doing this Venom that you enjoyed so much?
I believe it's not the same artist. It is Rick Remender who wrote it, who has been writing it for some time.
Okay.
I'm just going to call up the creator here.
Because I've been hearing you, and not just you, other people have talked about it. This was awful. This was an awful book. The characterizations are so... This reminded me of Defenders. Everything I said that I didn't like about Defenders, I could say about this. The characterizations are weak and nothing subtle about this book at all. The art is very detailed, but just silly for the intense action it's trying to portray. The dialogue is just overly clever. This was a piece of crap. I mean, Keith. Please don't tell me that this is what you've been reading and talking so much about.
Well, it is the same artist as did about half of the issues so far, as I quickly glanced through there, Tony Moore. Though the art looks much more rushed than what he's done in the past. And as I said, as soon as I started reading, I regretted that I made this the issue that you guys started on, because, no, it is. I don't feel it is representative of what's been going on in Venom. The last couple of issues where he's hanging around with Jack-O-Lantern, who is not Phil Urich, has been really enjoyable. And as I said, I mean,
that story didn't seem to quite wrap up before this started. I do have this feeling like this six issues is just going to be able to pop it out and not really notice it once it's done.
Maybe that would be like a different creative team, though.
Yeah, and strange that it is the same. But as I said, Remender's not writing. He doesn't write anything till part five, I think it is,
before he starts writing. I wouldn't want to read his. I can't think anybody else would do a worse job than this. This is just terrible. And like you say, the Red Hulk. This is a military man who's in his 60s. Take on the character, and this feels like a 15-year-old teenager. The dialogue and the characterization, but even the characterization like X-23, it's like she's walking by and she's hot, so some guy in a casino gooses her, and she threatens to kill him. That's really good. Yeah, I guess that's their way of in a three-panel thing telling me that character's personality. Well, you know what? That's shit. It really is. It's really weak. This is a weak, weak book. Let's move on to the next one. Chris, you talk about Alpha Girl.
Okay. Alpha Girl had me right off the bat. Just like the Intrepids. You got an emo girl in a Ramones t-shirt fighting off multicolored zombies. I'm in. They had my money there. And then we have the longest child abuse neglect thing going on. The whole thing could have been condensed into a page, just backstory, really unnecessary. It takes half the book to explain why she's disenchanted with the entire world. The whole child abuse thing is handled in the most cavalier of manners. And then we get origins on the zombie creators, which felt also really unnecessary. This whole book could have been condensed down to four pages and we could get right to the zombies. As it is, we got the first two pages with zombies and we got the last two pages with zombies. I really like The Walking Dead because they skipped all this crap and we just got right to the zombies. We got right to the meat of the matter. I'm putting this down. I'm going to join it back in on this title probably about issue 7 and see where it goes from there, because I really like zombies and I really like multicolored zombies and I really like emo girls. But I really don't like all this whining.
Chris, that might be your best review ever. That sums it up pretty damn good. I felt like this book was just really sleazy. Like, that was my trouble with it. The whole thing felt like it felt to me like it was sleaze for sleaze's sake, and it was just embracing it. And I didn't feel comfortable reading it. There's not a single likable character to me. It did feel like three different stories that it didn't decide which one it wanted to tell. I was disappointed. I was looking forward to this. I got nothing. I won't be coming back.
Why were the scientists, why was it important to tell us they've been demoted from the perfume department to the pheromone department?
It wasn't. And the idea that these pheromones like, created all these zombies.
I
anyways,
like zombies created by perfume better than some military
cosmetic
pheromone
company caused zombies. I mean, seriously, folks, think about it. It's just too much. I will not come back to this. It's not as awful as Venom, but it's pretty damn close and it's sleazier.
But it had more potential. There were characters I wanted to like.
I didn't. I didn't think it had any character I even wanted to like. I didn't like anything about it.
No, sorry. When I look at the cover, if you weren't to read this book, you flip through it, you want to like everybody in there. Because the art's good. It's good cartoony.
It is. I do
they
like the
fun
art style. Yeah, I did like the art. But book still did not work for me at all. Brett, why don't you move on to it?
I mean, essentially, I do feel the same way. Like, I saw the first page, and I thought, oh, this art looks pretty interesting. This character looks pretty interesting. And really, it was all downhill from that first page. Everything that came after it, I just thought was dumb, and I didn't care about it all. One of the number one things, though, about the book is that, for me, by the end, the art style was just getting on my nerves as well, and I would not want to read that or see that artist for another 22, 24, 28 pages again. No way I'd read it again.
Well, I wish I could mix it up a bit, but I really didn't like this book. I did like the art style at first, but I don't know, I lost interest not very long into it because I didn't really know whose story I was supposed to be following. And by the end of it, I got the feeling like those scientists were never going to be revisited again. So why am I spending so much time with them? You know, one of the great things about zombies and vampires and werewolves is that you don't have to spend a lot of time explaining them. You can just get right into it. The more time you explain it, the weaker it is. You know, when you come up with, a poison or a vaccine or something that caused vampirism, it just slows down your storytelling. You do have something like Walking Dead where, don't spoil it for me, if they do eventually find out what causes zombies, but it doesn't matter. That's not the story. The story is how people react to these situations. If you make it about, you know, the perfume company that caused zombieism, you're just going to bore the hell out of me.
You know, this came from Image as a major publisher, but it felt like it could have been published by a guy and his friends in a basement trying to get it out there. It felt very amateurish, top to bottom to me.
I'd rather have the basement comic.
Yeah. Chris, go ahead. Winter Soldier, man.
Winter Soldier. I was on Brew Baker's Captain America. I sort of lost the thread of everything happening at Marvel after Dark Reign. That Fear Itself thing sort of put a halt to a lot of my titles. I was planning on picking up Winter Soldier as a good jump-on point, and I'm going to. It was excellent. Really back on par with the international intrigue thing. I like the Winter Soldier. I don't have a huge attachment to Nomad that I feel is going to derail some people here. I do have one overwhelming question. Red Ghost, when did his monkeys start talking?
This is the only podcast you'll hear this week that has that question in it. When did the Red Ghost's monkeys start talking?
You know what? No, it's the same thing. I actually had the same idea. Like, when I picked up Venom,
I went back and looked up his last appearance, which was in She-Hulk. No talking monkeys.
No, I did the same thing, Chris. I picked, when I saw that, like, there was two for me moments this week. I mean, when I saw Ghost Rider was a woman, I went, Ghost Rider's a freaking woman now? And when I saw the gorilla talk, I went, the gorilla's freaking talking. Because as soon as I saw him, I thought, Red Ghost, because he's talking Russian. But the Ghost...
Mo, I've seen the sales numbers on the Ghost Rider comic. No one else knows she's a woman.
anything else you want to say on Winter Soldier, Chris?
No. I'm buying it. I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it. I'm really hoping they keep him away from Captain America a while so we can really get him on his own feet, so to speak. At the same time, I'm kind of hoping the Black Widow dies off as a supporting character a little bit. Once again, leaning a little too heavily on here, I really want to see the Winter Soldier develop into a mainstay of the Marvel Universe.
Well, the thing is, you have Captain America with his own series, and you have Bucky with his own series there, Winter Soldier, and then you have Captain America and Winter Soldier as a series together.
They're changing that book out.
Well, it's number 627, yeah. Winter Soldier was solicited at the end of this book. Winter Soldier and Captain America.
Yeah, Captain America and Bucky's turning into a team book. It's going to be Captain America and so-and-so.
It's a Marvel team.
Yeah, it's like a Marvel team-up type book, yeah.
All right. Okay.
It was covered in the news a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. You listen to this podcast?
You should really listen to We Talk Comics. There's very informative information in there, and it keeps you up.
I never listen when that cup recorder K talks. Just goes on and on.
Just hit the scrub.
All right. Why don't we go in reverse order here? Because I'm actually curious about your guys' take. What do you think, Keith?
Libra Mayo cover. That was awesome. That was the last thing I enjoyed about this book.
Thank God, because Chris said it was excellent.
I gave it a good shot. I'm on record with how much I don't like Bucky Back. I've told Brubaker that to his Twitter. We've had a little back and forth. He knows how much I disapprove. And I now know how to spell Jack Monroe. which...
If you don't know how to spell the name Monroe, considering who you work with in this podcast...
See, that's the problem. Is that Jack
yeah,
because
it's spelled differently.
Jack Monroe is spelled with an E, whereas my co-host spells it without an E, which is how Brubaker corrected my spelling when we got into it. But I acknowledge why he got rid of Jack. I don't like it. I don't know. I came in expecting that, that the cliche phrase, jump on point, I expected an explanation of who this guy is, why I should care. There's nothing in this book that if you haven't been reading at least some of what's going on with Winter Soldier that is going to get you into this book. There's no explanation for... I mean, if it wasn't for outside sources and knowing where what came out of Fear Itself from other podcasts, I wouldn't understand anything that's going on in this book. And, usually there's the previously on page for Marvel, and there is one that doesn't tell you anything. I didn't have a good feel for who this guy is, what his plans are, where the money's coming from. There seems to be a heck of a lot of money. I don't understand Black Widow anymore because I have no idea she was like 60 years old. So
yeah, that what? That was another what moment?
I've missed a huge thing. I need to hit the Wikipedia after we finish recording because I totally don't understand the character.
He's known her since the 50s? What?
What's that phrase?
That would make her 80 years old, dude.
There's that great phrase from Blade Runner. I was quit when I came in here. I'm twice as quit now.
Brett?
I mean, I've been reading this, I've been reading Captain America since Brubaker came on, and I am a really big fan of Brubaker and his Captain America. I came into this and I looked at it and I was just like, well, not that big a fan of the Winter Soldier, so I can't say that I know what this is going to be like. And by the end, I think that I enjoyed the fact that it was more of an intrigue story and less of a superhero story. I totally agree that I don't want to see Captain America in the book. And I just don't really want to see superheroing in the book. I want to see, spy stuff. That's the series that I want to see. I don't care if he becomes a big part of the Marvel Universe. I actually just hope that he stays away from the Marvel Universe to a certain degree. So, that I like the book. I can see it going off the rails, though, for me. But for this one, I like it, and I would keep reading it.
I thought this was poor quality. And I have not read a single issue of anything ever with the Winter Soldier. My only introduction to the Winter Soldier was in the Marvel Ultimate Alliance video game on Xbox 360. So that's all I know about this. I do feel like they tried to give me a little bit of a backstory, but it wasn't that good. And the art didn't do it for me that much either. I think Butch Geis is very good, but I think he's too heavy on his inks often. Here's my take on this issue when I set it down. I went, okay, so this story, Tom Cruise and the Black Widow break into some place. Then Tom Cruise and the Black Widow boff because superheroes are constantly boffing each other nowadays. Then Tom Cruise and the Black Widow, they break into another place. Then a monkey shoots at them. Then the story's over.
Which is 80 years old, so it's Angelica Houston and Tom Cruise.
Oh, my mistake.
No, I think this... I mean, the Winter Soldier story sort of got chopped in the Captain America book because they brought Steve Rogers back so soon. for crossover purposes and like that. I think they're just wanting to finish out that storyline or what they were planning to do with Winter Soldier before he became Captain America and like that.
Yeah, but I haven't read a single one of those, so I just didn't know what Tom Cruise was up to.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it probably connects in better if you read some others. As a number one issue, there are definitely huge problems.
Yeah, I think it's pretty telling that the two of us that don't follow Captain America didn't know what was going on and couldn't connect to the character more specifically, and the two that have dug the book. And I guess
the
maybe
fact
that's
that I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan also doesn't help. Like,
when we did our deaths episode, I certainly was quite vocal on bringing Bucky back, and as I read him in a story like this, I'm stuck with, what is this character doing that couldn't have been done with Jack Monroe?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? The idea of Tom Cruise boffing, I think it was actually Betty White. A little uncomfortable. All right. Let's move on to our final review. Brett, why don't you start it? You only read the Zero issue, so give your thoughts on Jurassic. What was this, Jurassic Strike Force 5? Or?
Oh, I don't even see the need to review this one, really. I mean, it's three pages.
I haven't actually read anything worth
Good point. Keith, do you have anything you want to say on it quick?
I did read the Zero and the number one. It's high on dinosaurs and low on pretty much anything else. The concept of dinosaurs with laser guns, it was kind of fun, and certainly I saw the cover of this and I said, yeah, I think we should do this on the show. I don't understand any of, like, I don't know if there even are characters so far. There just seemed to be, you know, I didn't read through the stuff in the Zero that was just the text pages, so I guess that was their version of characterization for these characters. There's a bunch of dinosaurs in one color costume, and then there's some other dinosaurs in some other color costumes. I hope next issue they fight. I might actually be interested in watching dinosaurs with guns fight. Send your brain off to other business. Watch some dinosaurs fight with guns.
Chris?
I'm wondering if they shipped this book with a little sticker on it that said, put directly in quarter bin. And that's how I'm going to read it. I didn't find it hugely bad. I thought the cover was deceptive because the interiors do not look anything as cool as the cover. There's some quite confusing facial expressions, and I couldn't tell the dinosaur characters apart at all, who was the good guys, who was the bad guy. It didn't make any sense. That said, it's dinosaurs with laser guns. When I 5 years from now, when I'm sorting through a quarter bin and I can pick up the whole run, I'm there.
All right. I kind of actually like the art, but and this did feel to me like a book that's created. It's like if I'm 10 years old, I probably love this. And it does feel like a book that's for a toy line. But the characterization, the dialogue got worse and worse as it went on. And there's a point where there's this kid who's like, I don't know, like 14 or something like that. And he meets this alien thing, and he goes, wow, you must be an alien. Cool. Whereas if I meet an alien, my reaction is, and then he's basically like, man, I'm going to talk to this alien. Whereas if I meet an alien, it's like, shit, it's an alien. I'm out of here. Run.
Yeah, but
it's
you're
a freaking
coward.
Alien. And this is horrid. All right. I'm done with this book too. I didn't like a single book this week. We read, guys. This sucked. Let's
Mo.
Go out.
It's been the world is picking on Mo this week. That is for sure. None of the news is good for you. I wish I had something to help you out with, but it was.
Again, I'm going to resist the mom joke. Let's move on. Get out of here. Brett looks like he's going to kill us. Brett, why don't you do your plugs?
Well, next week we should have a nice, fun interview with the boys from the band King up. They were a great bunch of guys, and I urge everybody to go out and find their album, Trampled Sun. We should have an interview with the band Warbringer coming up soon. Interested to see what that turns out like. And anyways, there's lots of other stuff going on. We got a lot of great music interviews that are going to be coming up. Otherwise, I'm sure we're going to have some great comics interviews as well. So I'm Brett at We Talk Podcasts and Brett_WeTalk for Twitter. So that's for me. And moving on.
Keith, your turn.
I'm Cub Reporter K on Twitter and Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com. If you want to email me, my blog on the new universe, part 3 is up. Part 4 will go up top of the week, which is the final part, talking about the new universe, post-new universe, including the way that I had a very, very small touch of the new universe at the end. And I want to plug something that my co-host did. I've been listening to the 2-part special on Janie Lane that Mo and Brett put together. I was never a big fan of Warrant, just the first couple albums way back in the day. But it's great to listen to how passionate Mo and Brett are about Janie Lane and his music, and just the positivity of it, and the joy that you've brought to talking about his work is quite enjoyable. So good work with that. It is available through our iTunes and Podomatic.
And our website.
And our website.
My favorite part of the podcast coming up now, Chris.
I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com. And I'd just like to say, Mo, cheer up. Bad comics can't last forever. There's going to be something good soon.
Oh, I hope so. I did kind of like the Daredevil. Shazam. I did kind of like the Daredevil you recommended to me. Yeah, thank you very much, Keith. And yes, like I say, it's almost 5 hours. Me and Brett worked on Pour Our Heart into the podcast, The Life and Times of Janie Lane. And yeah, go to www.wetalkpodcast.com, please. You can find that, all our content, Keith's content, blogs, other shows. There's going to be We Talk Wrestling's Return, did a post-Royal Rumble show. So that really is the place to go if you're hearing us on Podomatic. I mean, yeah, we're available there, but the best place to go for our stuff if you enjoy what we do is that. And you know, I appreciate, like I say, that Keith. You know, you talk about the positivity, and there's some in the second half. I think the second half, if you haven't gotten to it, it's a little more sobering because, of course, we talk about the later part of his career, which was quite sad. But that has more rare, great music. I think there's some really stuff that if you like music, you love clever lyrics and good hooks and you're really into it, give that stuff a shot because I think he's very underrated. We mentioned that. So thank you very much, everybody, and we're OUT.